Welcome back to the Pacifica National Board meeting of January 26, 2008. We will begin the afternoon session with the finance report presented by our Chief Financial Officer, Lonnie Hicks.
I'm going to try to combine three different reports in this presentation, and I'll try to go as fast as I can, so there'll be time for questions. I want to report on our finances for FY07, that is the fiscal year ending September 30th, 2007. Forgive my back. And I'm going to give you an idea of the first couple of months of fiscal FY08, October, November. And then I'm going to do a quick report on the gala, just so clear up some questions about what the gala was, a tremendous event, and other folks at WPFW can report out as well. So let me get started. Preserving Pacifica's financial future, and I'm concentrating here not only on those fiscal years, but what I think we need to sustain the network financially over the next 17 years. As you all know, we have a 60th anniversary coming up in 2009. That would be the 60th. For board members, I just wanted to let you know we were supposed to also include orientation members for new board orientation items for new board members. So in your board pack, you will find some finance-related documents. And one of them is a 17-year financial history of Pacifica broken down by station, that is, surplus deficits over the last 17 years. It goes to 1990 to 2006. It's not 2007 because we haven't finished 2007. At least the data isn't available. There's 17 years of Arbitrons for each station. And that is in the board pack. If it's not in the board pack, I can email that stuff to you. There is a primer on how to read Pacifica accounting and income statements for new board people. It sort of takes you through some accounting concepts, but also gives you sort of a narrative on what's in the reports that you get. You're getting five or six different reports. And my feelings were hurt, like Hillary's, when I found out that some board people had not read my reports. I couldn't believe it. So I'm putting it out as a narrative. There will be a quiz. I said I lost that whole weekend, no sleep, and didn't read my report. That's why in my CFO report, I put the summary of the financials right on the front page. So that everybody will see at least the summary. Then there's the bylaws, of course. Then there's that financial policies and procedures manual that our auditor had spoken about. And I urge the board to pass its approval of those financial policies and procedures manual. That thing took us a year and 3 months to do. The general managers, the business managers, the audit committee vetted, the finance committee vetted. So it is not a fly-by-night document. A lot of thought gone into it. And I do believe, as the auditor did say, if LSB members can have that document before them, they can easily find out whether it's being adhered to at the station. So it's a good tool, not a punitive tool, but a good tool. There's excerpts from the California Corporate Code. There's the CFO income and balance sheet statements, that is the income statements for September, October, November, and the balance sheets for September, October, November. There's the WBI recovery plan, which is the document of record that the Finance Committee, for those of you that don't know, has appointed a working group that is looking at WBI and includes the GM, WBI, the treasurer, the EED, the John Kriegler, our FCC attorney. Some staff. It's a number of people who are looking at WBI, providing expert support and technical support toward WBI's recovery. The recovery plan is dealing with some of the strict financial issues, but the Finance Committee also is looking at taking a proposal from an outside group, the Northern Nonprofit Connections, and to look at an organizational audit for WBI. So a lot is underway in connection with WBAI, concentrating on how the station's resources can be better used. There's the draft audit, and then there's PNB motions that are in that packet, which has all of the PNB motions, I think, going up to 2006. But they're arranged nicely, so if you want to see the finance-related ones, it is available in that document under financial motions. Okay, here's Pacifica's challenges. Well, when we start talking about Pacifica's challenges, you can guarantee the faces will start to droop, mine included. But let's, rather than go through the challenges, I'll do later. But I want to start with the answers. And usually when you talk about challenges, you usually get several answers at Pacifica. And the usual answers are grow audience. Grow the audience. But how do you do that? Well, there'll be a lot of different ideas about how to do that. Grow revenues. But how do you do that? And that is, you know, the issues and the problems are easy to come by, but boy, if you ask for a plan about how it will be done, sometimes people have good ideas, sometimes they have no ideas at all. But these are the things we struggle with. Reorganize the station. But how? Will it be all volunteer station, paid staff, unpaid staff? What will be the goals of a reorganized station? These are the usual answers that we hear. Fire everybody. That's the personnel answer. Sure, the problem with these stations is the personnel. Fire them all. The raise more money affair. Well, we can raise more money. We're talking now about off-air and on-air. But how? If you raise more money, you're talking about money from the on-air. You're talking about more money via the premiums route. You're talking more money off-air. The sell the trouble station answer. There's trouble at a station, sell it. I think that the answer lies in how we built this network in the first place. How did Pacifica become Pacifica is instructive. It's sort of reverse engineering the problem. How did we become the largest independent radio network in this country? It didn't happen with the previous six or seven. That's not how Pacifica grew. That is not how it got to be Pacifica. Pacifica, in my view, financially speaking, began with partnering with community progressive organizations and gradually built local and ultimately a national constituency. That was its secret. It began with large support from the Ford Foundation because initially it took years to build those local networks. Some of you know that history. And I think that, in a way, Pacifica has to go back to its roots and has to reach out to progressive organizations locally and nationally, because in scarce times, scarce dollars, and right-wing assaults, you need the support in the communities in order to survive. My argument is that the standalone radio station broadcasting to dedicated listeners, however dedicated, is a dinosaur. You have to have supports in the community. The model for that is what WPFW did. WPFW did not do a dinner, as everybody could dress up and smell good. What they did is they had in the same room at the same time the leaders of the progressive community, some of the leaders. They had community stakeholders in the room, 1,700 of them, and they brought the community together under the banner of a media event. Of course, radio stations have a megaphone. And that media-driven event with community stakeholders in the room enjoying a meal and celebrating their own is the key, I believe, to Pacifica's future. Those progressive organizations, 60 of them were outreached to. WPFW had 15 buildings at its disposal before the 6 months before the event. The building was just an excuse to talk to and bring together members of the community. It had a good deal of the tickets sold 3 or 4 months before the event by simply asking progressive organizations, we need underwriting for the event. And it did not rely on last-minute ticket sales. But it was not a radio event. It was a radio-driven community event. And I think that's an important concept for us to look at, because the revenue streams approached indirectly that way proved far more effective than saying, write me a check. What proved effective was become involved with this radio station, which is a community movement. So what W did was it gave everybody, stakeholders, progressive stakeholders in D.C., a sense that they were a community movement based around media. And that works. It not only works for W, by the way, it works for most large organizations. You have to see, people don't join organizations. They join things that will, they see that's important to their lives and makes them part of a larger movement. And that's the success. Okay, I'll stop ranting. The overview. Right now, we live in an environment for radios. Most of you know is at the down curve of the radio graph. In public health, public radio has lost revenue for the first time in 40 years. Otherwise, it's been a steady path of growth. That reversed 3 years ago. Revenues were flat. And then a year ago, for the first time, revenues went down. That includes NPR, it includes community-based radio stations, and a number of folks working in low-power and high-power radio. 50% of community radio stations have a deficit. 50%. They're not profitable entities. The revenues are flat, as I mentioned, and there are few jobs in radio. Few jobs. That puts enormous pressure, and we experience it here, on the mic. We are fighting over jobs because they're scarce jobs. You have people that have been in jobs and in shows for 20 years because there's no mobility. Where else are they going to go? It's hard to find a spot in a shrinking public market. We need to strengthen, as I say, expand our organic relations with local community organizations. The community base is our future. I'm making that proposition, that premise. And we have to repair our community image by going out to the community and directly relating to members of our community, and thereby creating our own image. If it's no more than holding community meetings, I think what I've seen over the years, and I've seen the revenue reflected, is slowly losing contact with the community is deadly for a radio station. You cannot lose contact with members of your community. You can't just do top-down broadcasting. You have to be out among community members and progressive organizations, understanding their issues and problems and having them reciprocated in meaningful ways. Raise revenue, and I think we have to sort of look at a new old concept of radio. Here's the overview for new board members mostly. We have 5 FCC licensed stations. That's the Federal Communications Commission. They're located in Houston, D.C., New York, L.A., and in Berkeley. Who did I leave out? I always wonder if I'm left with someone out. We have an $18 million budget, and we are a minority licensed network. People don't really understand that. We receive funds from Corporation for Public Broadcasting for the express purpose of reaching minority communities and providing a voice for them. Our board, this board, is required to be under those guidelines, minority-majority. We are required at each station to reach at least 35% minority levels because that's the purpose of the funds. We are required at each station to have a staff that's minority-majority. And we're required at each station to have a community advisory board. If we don't have a community advisory board, the CPP money goes away entirely. No questions asked. We just lost CPP funding because one of our stations did not meet one of the guidelines for minority-majority staff. Now, we could take the money and say we don't want it and send it back, but it's $1.6 million. And more importantly, it comes to us in lump sums, which is central to our cash flow. We are a network. That's what we call seasonal business, that we get money, but it takes 3 months for us to get the funds that we raise. 3 months. It's a long time. And the CPP monies make it possible for the continual operations at Pacifica with a cash infusion in large sums twice a year. We have 170 employees or 10,000 volunteers, although I can't vouch for that number. I don't know how many volunteers we have. It's just a number that I've seen people estimate, but I don't know, but I'm guessing maybe 10,000. We have, in some stations, 200 volunteer staff doing on-air programming. Some stations have that many. And the uniqueness of Pacifica is that it is probably, maybe you folks know better, but from the data I've seen, its uniqueness is that it produces 200 shows a day, original material. That is precious in the media business. Who does that? Does ABC do that? No. Does HBO? Nobody does that. And content is queen and king in the media business. Who's producing original material? Pacifica. Nobody else does that. We are a precious, precious resource because of what we do. And it's easy to lose sight of that. We're in the five largest markets in this country, reaching potentially 30 to 40 million people. 30 to 40 million people in Houston, New York, Berkeley. That's huge potential audience. People, who cares, right? Who cares? A lot of people care. We found out at WPFW, who cared about that market? Politicians care. Community organizations care. Labor unions care. They all need to get a message out. And we sit in what is a media-dominated century. Media dominate this century. In the whole world, you know. We are coming up with a 501c3 organization. And we are coming upon some critical landmarks in Pacifica. That WPFW's 30th anniversary was the first that we motivated. But there are other stations that are moving to anniversary marks, and that would be, we're 60th in 2009. PRA has its 35th anniversary coming up. KPFK has its 50th, and Pacifica's 60th. Now, our drivers, my conception. What is the source of Pacifica's stability? We see sometimes the conflict. We see what sounds like incredible instability, but you know, in reverse engineering, you ask the question, how is this institution sustained then? Is it all chaos? No way. It's been around 60 years. So it has survived in spite of what looks to many of us chaos. So why? How? How is that possible? How do you do that? Here's the answer, I think. We have been event-driven. Our revenue spiked during periods of war, during periods of national events, because people then come to us and ask for the information we provide. So we are event-driven. Maybe not as much as we should be, but it's certainly a factor. You can see the revenue over 17 years go up during war. You can see the revenue go up at another period, during the take-back period. People learned, many of them, about Pacifica only through the massive publicity about the infighting. And I went, look at that spike. It went up during the infighting because so many people, you talk to people about Pacifica, see, I remember you guys. I remember the fight you had. That's how they first learned of Pacifica, because of publicity. That was an internal event. We're premium driven. We have become a premium. Oops. We become a premium. By the way, I will make these slides available. I'm going to speed through some of the rest of them, but they are available. We become premium driven. We've become a premium-driven entity. That is, we're selling premiums. The difficulty with becoming premium-driven is that there are fewer listeners. So you have to squeeze more dollars out of fewer and fewer listeners, and that gets to be more and more difficult. We are talent-driven. Like it or not, audiences come to prefer certain people who grow large audiences, and that becomes an important source of revenue for Pacifica, in a sense, if you look at what shows produce in terms of revenue. I'm not saying we have to be that way. I'm not saying we should be that way. I'm just looking at what are obvious drivers. But what is the source of stability for Pacifica above those items which are sporadic? Sometimes premium sales, sometimes they don't. Sometimes event spark interest in revenue, sometimes it doesn't. And talent moves on. But what has provided stability in Pacifica is those 200 shows a day and the programmers who put them on the air. The GMs come and go. The boards come and go. But it is the programmers producing these shows, these events every day, that has provided 60 years of stability to Pacifica. And creating that audience, that loyalty, that sense of who we are, that is, in my view, the source of stability that has sustained the network on a reverse engineering concept. Took years to do. Now, we need to diversify revenue sources. Question, what has been the revenue sources for this network? Well, individual subscribers, we're all familiar with that. But we also have had community supports that go up and down during various years. We've formed coalitions with various community organizations, anti-war organizations, peace organizations, justice organizations, and it waxes and wanes. That is, some years we have those contacts, then the station may drop them, not really maintain them. But they have been there for us. Grants, governmental grants, I mentioned CPB monies, fundraising on and off air, of course, and then self-generating revenue activities for various rents. That's an overview. The quick financial summary, therefore, is listener support has been flat the last 3 years. But expenses in 2008 will be flat. Why? Because you have to reduce expenses, otherwise you're in deficit territory. New sources of revenue we did identify, and those are the aforementioned community supports, which we're working hard at. And I hope to take advantage of the anniversaries to reinvigorate community contacts, at least in the concept that I work with. We have financial units. We have the stations, KPFA, KIT, and W, the national office, PRA, and affiliates. Who am I missing? I guess that's everybody. Who did I miss? All right.
Lonnie, would you say what PRA is?
PRA is Pacifica Radio Archives. For those of you that don't know, Pacifica has long since an archive of its programming and its archive of its broadcasts, archive of some written materials. It's housed in L.A., sharing premises with KPFK, and it is a gold mine of our history, not just Pacifica's history, but the history of social movement in the United States since 49. And it's widely regarded as one of the most inclusive archives. Finances, true and false. We are bankrupt. True or false?
False.
Why are we not bankrupt? Well, because we're not. And I'll go through it. Our deficit is growing. True or false?
False.
We had a deficit in 07, but that was partly due to finance decisions by our auditor, where he put most of the money in FY08. And so FY08 would be huge, the largest surplus showing in our history, probably. So looking at the 2 years, it's about average. We need to be better. We always need to be better. Our audience is shrinking. Yes, that's true. Our audience is shrinking. But it's event-related shrinkage. Let's do comparison. 2003, 2004, Pacifica audience was at its peak, 1 million listeners a week. Where is it now? 768,000 listeners a week. But that is about where it was pre-peak in 2003. The Arbitron data are there, however much you may regard the Arbitron data, true or false. But trend, 17 years worth of trends is a trend. So if it's wrong, it's wrong in a uniform, consistent way. Our revenues are shrinking. Our revenues are not shrinking, but they are flat. They're not growing, and that matters. If your revenues don't grow and your expenses do, our expenses grow every year, 3, 5, 7, 10%. Insurance goes up every year whether our revenues do or not. Healthcare costs grow up every year. Salaries go up every year. Well, where is that extra money coming from if our revenues are flat? I repeat, where is that extra money coming from if the revenues are flat? We'll leave that one as a mystery. I'll come back to it later. Now, listenership. I'm going to go a bit faster, but it's all available to you on these PowerPoints. These are the people that support Pacifica. We got activist listeners, libertarians. How do we know who they are? Because we have mailed to them and gotten their responses. This is our base, folks. Activist listeners, libertarians, civil rights groups, local supports and organizations. National supporters across the United States. You got people living in Joplin, Missouri that send us checks that never hear our signal. Why? Because they support the idea of progressive radio. Members of progressive groups, affiliates, Democracy Now! FSRN supporters who also support us. 60s activists, minority communities, and I did not forget a huge supporter of Pacifica. Many of you don't maybe realize because I see this stuff. Is the ACLU. Support Pacifica. They are members, not the organization. Their members have a real affinity for Pacifica. They're civil libertarians. That's how I've sort of put them under that.
What about the internet?
Small but growing. Small but growing. Internet, I think some of you folks can correct me, but I know mostly KPFA because I'm next door. I think they peaked during say, a war or threat period or Bushism, which threatens to invade Iran, 1,500 listeners. But mostly 200, 300, 400. And I can only say about KPFA, I don't know the others. I go on. This is hard to see, but what this is a chart of the ethnicity and age of Pacifica radio audiences compared to NPR. NPR is, Pacifica's blue, NPR is red. If you look over to the right, where is, I can't read it. Oh, the three right-hand sides are age group 65 and up. Pacifica's blue, Metro, NPR is red. Pacifica has a higher proportion of people over 65 listening to us. The next bar coming from the right, 50 to 64 age group, Pacifica, as you can see, spikes well above the red bar in the age group 50 to 64. The average age of our Pacifica listener, 51, 52. The average age is probably this room, 51, 52. And why is that? You know, why is that? Well, we were fumbling around trying to figure it out, then the answer was obvious. Pacifica has a history of loyal listeners who have stuck with the organization over the years and have remained with us. That's a wonderful blessing in terms of loyalty, but we have not trained our succeeding generations and leaders at Pacifica. We have no significant youth cadre. Some stations are trying to work at it. But by and large, there's no one behind us. When we go, we're gone. We need to do something. You got to have some way to replace ourselves. We're all older. There will be a $1 trillion exchange from the baby boom generation, and many of us in it and above it or behind it, somewhere close to it. And once those dollars exchange hands, that is, that the baby boomers will inherit from mom and dad and grandma and grandpa. Huge amount of money. Be the largest transfer in the history of this country, over $1 trillion, in the next 5 years. Because mom and dad are getting older. Many of them already have health problems and issues. Somebody's going to sell grandma's house and wonder what to do with those funds. That's you and me. What are we going to do with the funds we inherit, if we're lucky enough to inherit? Wills. Talking about wills, exactly. That's true. But what that is the opportunity of Pacifica. It's a 5-year window. We need to do something about it. And I'll go on to the next one. Ethnicity and age, which I'm moving on to the next one. Who's our audience in terms of gender, ethnicity, and age? The blue is NPR. The red is Pacifica. Men and women on the extreme left. Well, you can't see it too well here. Let me see if I can spruce that up. No, I can't spruce it up. Women, the next bars, about even between us and them and women. Blacks, look at Pacifica compared to NPR. In terms of listeners, third set of bars. We outnumber NPR, but it's only 27-28% of our listeners are African Americans or blacks. Next bar over, Hispanics. Something like 12% versus NPR's listeners. Then you go 18 to 34 group. NPR has younger listeners than we do. You can see the blue bar is taller. And then and so forth, the pattern holds, except for the 50 or 60-year-olds and 65-year-olds where we have more. We have more elderly listeners. Okay. Now, that's just for the benefit of new people. I'm doing most of this. Future options. What is the growth vector for Pacifica? What's our future going to be in relation to membership, in relation to finances, in relation to ourselves being a media organization? I just think we need to look to local membership in those contexts to grow. We need to increase our national support, and we need to increase regional support. We have to start to see ourselves not as just local broadcasters broadcasting to a city, but regional broadcasters. You are representing progressive radio in a region, not just in a state, and not some of us maybe even internationally.
Right, to the world.
That is not a pipe dream anymore. If you create,
please, members of the audience.
Okay, I'll skip through This is the current trends. I'll skip through it. Just for contrast, older membership base looking for younger membership base. Top-down broadcasting looking to do more bottom-up broadcasting. Few organizational alliances, maybe looking to do more organizational alliances. Local programming, more collaborative broadcasting and looking to broadcast to larger and regional audiences, if not a national audiences. Event-driven network, maybe more community-driven network. Event and news-driven network, maybe looking to be more mission-driven in terms of contacts with communities. Low-tech network, with an analog base, need to move to HD and a high-tech base. Station-based delivery system, and we have to move to a multimedia delivery system, including digital. Podcasting.
Satellite.
Internet. Internet. All that stuff. And I got some revenue strategies here. I won't go over them. They're available for you. And I'm moving on. Expense strategies are here and available. And then I will go. We can't stand pat. We're in trouble. And I'll go right through some of the finances. What is to be done? You have some of my suggestions there. What to do? Summary. Go regional. Go bottom up. Expand at the local level. Diversify revenue sources. That would be the summary, which would be funding the future. I put in here the things on physical plant and technology we need. These are things that are long-standing or deferred maintenance. We got stations that need to move. We got stations that are in quarters that are too expensive for them. We have stations that are in buildings that need rehab. We talked about the national office needs new office space. Yes, we do. We need new equipment. We need to restore our archives. We have archives, for those of you that don't know, that are new people, that we have that repository I spoke of, but it's sitting there, and it's acetate tape, and it needs to be digitized, and it costs $12 million. Otherwise, the tape will simply deteriorate, flake, when you try to restore it, even using the old machines, because the new machines will tear the tape up. We need to restore our archives. Otherwise, the tapes will simply sit there, and they will be gone. $12 million. We need to do more community outreach. I just spoke about that, and we need to support our affiliates in the terms of expanding that affiliate base. That's just cost price tag $15 million. I go out and I'll ask for 20, because that's what we need if you're looking large to stabilize in terms of the various needs that we have. You know, think 20 million. The gala summary, I'm almost finished. And then I'll do the financials if you want. But the gala summary, it was a collaboration between WPFW and the national office. WPF celebrating WPFW's 30th anniversary. It was a Peace and Justice Awards gala, and it awarded 10 awards to various people who have worked in the peace and justice area. It was at Washington Convention Center, 1,700 tickets sold, could have sold 2,500. It was a stellar event. There was a DVD made of it, raised $240,000, $40,000 at the door net. And then a couple of days later, we got a $200,000 donation, which was part of a $1.1 million donation with a match of $1.1 million. Total would be $2.2 million. Donor is a WPFW listener who had not given that kind of money. If we'd known he had that much money, we may be asked earlier. And it turns out that he will support us and help raise the match money as well, which is just a golden. It doesn't get much better than that kind of grant. We did, Dan and I did meet with the donor and who happened to have been in Oakland a couple of weeks ago. Who paid for dinner, Dan? I forget. Yeah, we paid. That's right. We paid, didn't we?
That's right.
That was a mistake. That's what I want to know. Who paid for dinner? I think we did. Finally, he reached, and we knew he had it, but we figured we'd give him a break. The WBI, the way out. Just wanted to summarize some of the issues that we have already discussed around WBI. Here's the problem, financially speaking. WBI is running a $250,000 a year deficit. It's what we call an operating deficit in its yearly budgets. It also has on the books a $300,000 in debt. A good part of it is legal. When a problem in the legal area pops up at a given station, it is not the PNB that pays the lawyers in these cases. That charge goes to the station. The more litigation at the station, it goes on the books as a debt to that station, not some amorphous network bill. So it definitely drives the deficit down in the station. What are the solutions? WBI has the largest actual audience in the network, somewhere 200,000, 225,000 weekly listeners. Most of the other stations are between 175 and 150, I repeat. Most stations in Pacifica, look at the Arbitron data, have listeners that are between 180 and 150,000 listeners a week. WBI's listeners are 200,000, 225. It's in the largest market in the network, so you expect it to have more listeners. Community supports are critical, and I believe that if WBI does reach out to the community in the way WPFW did, it could raise easily $1 million or $2 million, despite the bad image, despite the bad publicity. Still can do it. There is a WBI recovery plan, which is in your board pack, and is very detailed. Tries to answer the questions, how do you get out of the building, and what are the drivers in the cost structure of that network, of that station. And then there is a finance working group, which is focused solely on WBI, starting the work of looking at solutions for the station. My action requests are approved. The financial policies procedures manual is critical to stabilizing and uniformizing our financial policies at the station levels and the national level. I think we ought to support WBI's anniversary activity because they're trying to do, as I mentioned, what WBI has done. It's critical to support them around the network. I think the board ought to look at fundraising, and it would be nice if you folks were to open up your Rolodexes to the community groups you have contact with and bring them into the process of supporting WBI in terms of a gala, in terms of looking for a building. WBI has to do what WPFW is doing. They need to buy a building. They need to move out of the expensive quarters. They need to not only buy a building and gain a mortgage, but buy a building large enough that it can have tenants and produce revenue that self makes that enterprise self-sustaining. That's what WPFW needs to do as well. Asked to replicate WPFW, I think it's possible to do. People will be skeptical. No, yes, this is being done. Every large organization does a yearly fundraiser with a silent auction, with a dinner, with luminaries, with supports from the communities, with supports from community organizations. You go to mine, I go to yours, sort of thing is very common among nonprofits. And we can do it. We can do it. Democracy Now! Is actually imitating us and holding a Capitol Gala February 20. They were there at W's Gala, and I learned that that actually Democracy Now!, at least Amy, started at WPFW, which I did not know. So anyway, summing up, then I'll go, that's it. That would be a quick overview on an orientation side for people that knew the new folks, what is Pacifica and sort of some of the issues. There are others I didn't cover, but those are the ones that popped up for me. I can now, if you like, go to the financials, but I can stop for questions if you like. But just in case, I will pull it up while I have it here. And this is a look at our immediate audit, our financial reports, and what the numbers are. In terms of 07, the concrete numbers, I have that ready if you choose to go there next. Or if you want to take a break.
Okay, I'll take a stack. I have Sherry, Bob, Nia, Mike, Grace, AC, Margaret. Did I miss anyone? Evelyn.